Colorado's marquee nuclear bill heads to Governor Polis' desk. Environmentalists fight new gas plants in northern Colorado. Plus, growing signs that energy realism is starting to set in. We discuss all this and more on this week's edition of the Power Gab Podcast. I'm co-host Jake Fogelman, and you're listening to the audio version of the show. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing and sharing. And to check out the video version, head on over to powergab.org for new episodes every week. Enjoy! All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Power Gab, your go-to show for all things energy and environmental policy in the state of Colorado. I'm Jake Fogelman, joined as always by my co-host Amy Cook. In today's episode, we want to talk about a little bit of a broad theme. We think it's the era of energy realism. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, we have a pretty substantial legislative update to share with you guys. Amy, what happened with the nuclear bill that we've talked this so much about?
It's headed to the governor's desk. It's funny because we deal with states all over the country with what we do. Nuclear power is in 28 states, and millions of people reliably. So this is a really big deal for Colorado. For the rest of the country, they're like, oh, how cute. That's fabulous. Welcome to the world of reliable power. And we're like, you don't get it. This is a huge step for Colorado. We've been talking about nuclear power here for a very long time, but it took several tries at the state legislature to finally make it real. And a big thank you to Larry Liston, State Senator Larry Liston, who was relentless in his pursuit of bringing nuclear energy to Colorado in the sense of at least getting it included in the state's definition of clean. So a big thank you to him. Colorado Nuclear Alliance, which came together, which is a bipartisan group that was also on sort of the leading edge of educating Colorado voters about the importance of nuclear energy in Colorado's portfolio. And I look at this as we talk about this term that is starting to show up in the energy policy vernacular, which is energy realism. I look at this development with HB 1040, which is headed to the governor's desk. It's probably already sitting there. Maybe he's already signed it. I don't know. But the fact that Colorado is going to have nuclear as part of its resources that are considered clean that it can use in the state, it sends a signal that Colorado is open for nuclear investment, that the state is certainly willing to entertain nuclear energy, which is a great thing if you actually care about reliability. We've talked about this. If you were to draw a Venn diagram of those who are concerned about emissions and climate change, and then you have in another circle those who are concerned about reliability and affordability. And if you were to put, and then a third circle were included all the resources, the only overlapping circle is nuclear. Right. So it is totally makes sense that we should have it, but it took a while for us to get it.
Yeah.
We do, it looks like Governor Polis has indicated he would sign it. So that's great, great news. So for energy realism and for the state of Colorado, this is a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right that it is a sign of the energy realism even setting in Colorado. I just want to echo also that giving kudos to Larry Liston because, like you said, Senator Liston, when he was first introducing this bill, was the lone guy attaching his name to this effort. No one came on board with him, and each year he got more and more support. So kudos to him for getting it over the hump. But to your point about energy realism, the fact that it did take so long, Colorado was so openly hostile to nuclear energy for so long. We have so many environmental groups that are located here that it's in their DNA to be opposed to this sort of stuff. To see all of a sudden that very same state come across with this big bipartisan effort. I mean, it passed the Senate 29-5. It's
right.
Overwhelming support.
Right.
It's like suddenly, it's dawning on them. we can't afford to, you know, pick winners and losers and play favorites with just wind, solar, and batteries only. Energy growth is here. People need reliable, affordable electricity. And, you know, as much as we've been steeped in this tradition of opposing nuclear, we just don't have that luxury anymore. So no. Energy realism sitting at, seeping in, even in Colorado.
And make no mistake, it's not... This is still going to cost money.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It just... Nuclear will be less expensive than wind, solar plus batteries. It'll be less expensive in the long run than wind, solar, and batteries. It still is not cheaper than our existing coal.
Yeah.
So don't think that your rates are going to stay the same. They're just going to be less expensive than they would be if we were only decarbonizing with wind, solar, plus batteries. I'm going to add two other things to this conversation about nuclear. Other thing, we need to give a shout out to Senator Bob Rankin, too, who yep. was also part, he was on sort of the initial nuclear bandwagon, especially with, he represented Northwestern Colorado yep. and Craig Power and knowing what was happening there. So nuclear, he's always been a champion of that. And we have talked to him and we've talked with Senate Minority Leader Paul Lundeen about this. But to your point, Larry Liston, God bless him. Yeah. Like he just wasn't taking no for an answer, even though no one's, you know, he was out there by himself essentially. And I, you know, a lone wolf kind of, and now to get 29 and 5, I will point this out. What a difference not having two senators make.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw out Kevin Priola. And the other one is Chris Hansen. Those two gone, the largest obstacles to nuclear in the state Senate, those obstacles went when those two left. And I often wonder, does Kevin Priola still drive a Tesla?
That's a good question, especially these days.
Just wondering. That's for another show.
Yeah. Other lawmakers, I do want to give kudos to the folks that the Democrats that were willing to sign their name as co-primes as well. Representative Alex Valdez was a huge addition to this effort because
he's a
Denver Democrat. He's, you know, he worked for a solar company. He's seen as sort of an energy and environment guy down there at the Capitol. And him sticking his neck out, being an urban Democrat, where there's a lot of hostility to nuclear energy, him being willing to attach his name to this effort, I think played a key role as well. So kudos to him for being willing to cross the partisan lines to, you know, fight for a bipartisan effort for affordable, reliable power.
And also Dylan Roberts, who represents Northwestern Colorado now, he's well-respected. He's thoughtful. So he was a big help as well. So you're right. I mean, there are a lot of people to thank for getting this here. I mean, no one person did it by themselves. This was... You know, Derek, a collective effort. Yeah. There were a lot of groups involved, a lot of people involved. We're proud, of course, the work we did here at the Independence Institute, but also big thank you to all of the groups that wanted this to happen and saw it through to fruition.
Yeah, absolutely. But continuing on the theme of energy realism and maybe some of the folks that haven't got the memo yet and are fighting a little bit of energy realism, there was an interesting story in the Colorado Sun that we wanted to highlight because it's talking about the Platte River Power Authority. It's a sort of a consortium of municipal utilities in northern Colorado. I think Fort Collins is involved, Loveland's involved as well. A lot of the major towns up there in northern Colorado. Essentially, they're in a fight right now because they want to build six essentially peaking gas turbines, six new gas turbines to help meet load up there. They're seeing the same thing that every other utility is seeing in the state and across the country, that hey, load growth is here. We're not going to be able to do this affordably with just wind, solar, and batteries being added to our grid. So we need some actual dispatchable power. And yet there's a whole host of environmentalists that are up there fighting that effort right now.
It's the usual groups. 350.org is one of them. And living in northern Colorado, I know these people, we see them. They fight everything from, you know, water reservoirs to you know, sensible or energy realism, as we've taken to call it. And by the way, that's a term I think you're going to continue to hear because it is entering the energy policy vernacular.
Yeah.
It's energy realism, like having a realistic view of what is possible. In other words, as Chris Wright said, we're going to follow the science and the math.
I was just going to say, Chris Wright is sort of the embodiment of what energy realism looks like, his whole ethos.
Yeah. Right. And so there's some great stuff out there about, you know, comments from him about it. But here's the thing with the Platte River Power Authority, which serves 350,000 customers roughly, pointed out Fort Collins, there's Loveland, there's Estes Park, and I think a little bit of Longmont is in there. It is served by the Rawhide plant right now. Well, actually, let's back up. In 2018, they jumped on the, we'll be carbon free or net zero by 2030. And I'm sure in 2018, 12 years away seemed like just a long way away. Well, here we are, 2025, they're 5 years away. And the largest source of fuel for them, their largest resource for power generation right now is coal. It still is coal.
Yep.
And what they're looking at, what I'm guessing, is they're looking, actually, what they're probably seeing is, oh my gosh, we can't build enough wind, solar, and batteries and keep the cities that we are charged with powering actually online. So the thought is we either keep the coal plants open or we start building gas peaker plants, which would be, you know, Rocky Mountain Institute has now actually found some religion on gas peaker plants. But that's, by the way, the most expensive way to run a natural gas plant.
Sure.
It's the most inefficient way to run a natural gas plant. But even Rocky Mountain Institute, the Institute of Amory Lovins, who hates all fossil fuels and nuclear, even they are saying wind, solar, batteries, plus natural gas peaker plants are the only way you're going to power the grid. You can get to roughly 80%, but for the last 20%, you got to have something that's dispatchable, deliverable, which could be questionable because nobody can get a transmission line. So here's the point. The natural gas plants, peaker plants, can actually be built where the Rawhide station is right now.
Yeah.
So you could do it right there. You already have the access to the power lines. You not so much with wind, solar, and batteries, and you're not going to get those transmission lines built in the next 5 years. It's just not going to happen. So they're looking at these gas peaker plants. Your other options, 350.org and other eco-fundamentalist groups, would be to keep coal online.
Right.
Because they're not going to shut down reliable power when there's nothing to replace it.
No, you're absolutely correct. And it's almost like we're Groundhog's Day having the same argument over and over again because, you know, for the longest time we've talked about how, you know, you want to cut carbon emissions, but also, like you said, these utilities aren't just going to not have reliable power for the people that they're responsible for serving. And that means gas. You got to make your peace with that. It means gas. It's going to mean gas for the foreseeable future. Even to your point, folks like RMI are saying it. The Colorado Energy Office study that we've referenced so many times, their best, most economic case actually involves building more gas capacity on Colorado's grid because of that same fact that you need gas as sort of that get out of jail free card where you can say, oh, 80% of the time it's mostly renewables, but boy, when conditions get tight, you're real grateful that that gas is there to save your bacon. And the fact that you know, this was evidently going to be a smooth process for getting these peaker plants built, and all of a sudden these groups get involved, a couple of state lawmakers get involved, some familiar faces that at the Capitol are pushing back to try to get permits to be denied for this, and it gets to a point where you either have reliable power or you don't. I know you want to be idealistic and say no new fossil fuels, no new stranded assets. It's their favorite term. They think gas is just going to be a stranded asset in 5 years. I guess reality hasn't sunk in for them. But you know, at some point, something's got to give, and that means new gas.
So gas is going to be a stranded asset in 5 years. I would say that this isn't even a bold prediction. This is just my prediction. And if I'm wrong on it, listen, I'll be the first one to say it. Rawhide, Platte River Power Authority is not going to be emissions free by 2030.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. And I'm going to even throw something else out there. Coal stays online.
Yeah.
I don't see them shutting down coal.
That actually reminds me of an important point, because not only do they own the Rawhide plant, which is a coal plant, they are part owners of the two Craig units that are supposed to be at least closed by 2028. And so once again, assuming that does go through, and I think you could be right, we might see delays to that, but assuming those closures do go through, you got to have that gas there to keep the lights on. That's a substantial amount of baseload, always available, reliable power that's just going to disappear in a number of years. And the fact that you'd be fighting new dispatchable resources to take that place seems a little insane to me. But I think you also might be right that maybe those retirement dates aren't so firm.
I just don't think it's going to happen. We have at the federal level people saying, for instance, both the president and Chris Wright, I'll throw in Doug Burgum, the Interior Secretary, mm-hmm. as well, saying we need addition, not subtraction. We need addition when it comes to generation. We can't afford to take things offline. So I'm just going to go bold. I don't even think it's bold, actually. It might be in Colorado, and it might be a news flash to the media, but I don't think it will be in a whole bunch of other states. Coal, these early retirements of coal plants, I just don't see them happening. Yeah. I really don't. And utilities might hate that, because, by the way, utilities are fine with shutting down already paid for coal plants. They're great with it. Why? Because they can build something new, and that gets added to their rate base. Not only do they get cost recovery, but it's added to the rate base on which they earn a rate of return. So they like their rate base, their asset base increasing.
Oh, yeah.
So they just earn a rate of return on it. So they're fine with shutting it down. But although municipals are different, because it's technically owned by the city. But here's the thing. If we have this, we've already declared, the president has declared a national state of energy emergency. And that opened up a couple of things, like the LNG exports and mm-hmm. things like that. But I just don't see, at the federal level, I think you're going to see something that comes down and says, you know what, you're not shutting down coal. I don't care if you want to. You're just not. I just wouldn't be surprised if that were the case.
A couple of other market forces that have started to really rear their heads that also, I think, lend a little bit of support to that idea is that, one, you've seen some supply chain kinks in like solar and wind steel. There's tariffs, obviously, on Chinese solar panels that have caused some problems. Transmission lines have been taking far longer to build than people, at least the modelers, the expert modelers, that anticipated. And then now, all of a sudden, we're starting to see a shortage of gas turbines. A bunch of gas turbine manufacturers are saying, hey, we're booked out. People, data centers, they really want this stuff. Utilities really want this stuff. It's going to get harder and harder to get these gas turbines. And guess what? That means, hey, maybe we don't shut down the already built and already paid for baseload power plants that we have right here in our backyard.
That are working.
That are already working. So I really do think, like you said, it's maybe a bold idea to say in Colorado in 2025 right now. But boy, the red flags are starting to pop up with data centers, EVs, home electrification, and maybe a potential shortage of other resources. So maybe we don't decide to shut down the gigantic coal plants that we have in our
coal
grid.
The coal plants that have been working and are connected to the grid already, and they can get the resources for them, and they don't have to build a new pipeline, and they don't have to build new transmission lines. They're already there, and they are already working. But let me ask you this, Jake, and admittedly, I was gone for a few years. I get it. Why do groups like 350.org and others, I mean, this is a whole story about how these groups, is natural gas a bridge to clean energy or a climate backslide? That's a Colorado Power Company's dilemma. I'm just reading the headline. Platte River Power Authority wants to install 5 natural gas turbines to ease its transition into new into renewables, but local residents and state lawmakers don't want to go backward. So why does a group like 350.org or any other eco-fundamentalist group get so much ink in the newspaper? And maybe it's because they have that much influence. Having been gone, I get it that maybe I don't know all of the idiosyncrasies of what's happening with media and energy coverage. But I also want to go, I also look at this and go, they don't want to go backward. So I go, backward, like maybe to unreliable power.
Back to the Stone Age?
Yeah. Like back to when ships were powered with sails and you had to get up close and shoot your cannon over, and it hit the wooden ship, the wooden hull, and then, or maybe hit one of the cloth sails and catch it on fire. I mean, they don't want to go backward. I mean, that should be in quotation marks, right? Like literally, if somebody said that, don't want to go backward to ancient technologies like wind and solar. And the usual suspects, Faith Winter and Lisa Cutter, who aren't even in, nor, I mean, those, they don't represent any of those cities.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering why they get so much ink.
No, it's a longstanding gripe of mine. And, you know, your point about backwards being a little bit of an editorial tipping of the cards there by the Colorado Sun, who, to their credit, I think does some of the better energy reporting.
Actually,
in the state.
Mark Jaffe,
yeah,
by the way.
They do some good energy reporting, but I think that is a little bit of editorializing there in the headline. this is a longstanding gripe of mine that any energy story whatsoever, you get three quotes from XYZ megachurch environmental groups. Sierra Club gets one, NRDC gets one, 350 gets a quote. You never see that same deference afforded to the other side. The only people speaking in favor in this story of the gas turbine is the utility itself. And there's no other outside group, whereas, hey, let's ask three environmental groups and some lawmakers that hate this idea and some other folks that hate this idea, and you just have the one side making the case for the gas turbines. There's totally an imbalance and a bias on that front in Colorado media, and it's been going on for as long as I've been doing this in this state. You certainly don't see the same kind of deference of, hey, is there anyone willing to make the intellectual or policy case for these gas turbines? I guess you don't get ink space in the article count there. But
that's lazy journalism. Because actually, so some things have never changed. I will say that back when we were having these conversations, 2010 or so, starting around 2010, when we were really starting to ramp up here at the Independence Institute on energy and environmental policy, it never occurred to them that there was another perspective, or right. We were seen as crazy lunatics, which, okay, I mean, sometimes that it could be entertaining, but the point being, we were the ones talking about energy realism then. We didn't have a phrase for it. It sounded like we were just saying no, but what we were telling people is reliability is going to go down. And affordability expense will go up.
Right.
You'll pay more for less reliable power. And that's what we were saying. And that's what we're seeing. And now you have these utilities that seemed quick to jump on, we're going to get to carbon free or net zero or whatever you want to call it by 2030. When it was 12 years away and it seemed like it would be so easy, and it's not. And as Chris Wright said the other day, net zero is anti-human, and that's what this is.
Right.
So to me, that's the backward thinking.
Right. And just to do, to your point about the media bias and our voice being sometimes the only voice on the other side and they don't even think of it, just a little shameless self-plug, that's what Power Gab is for. We try to fill, if it's not going to be in the print media, that we try to provide that other perspective to folks here. So if they're not going to include it in the storyline, we'll at least comment on the story and give you our two cents and sometimes say, well, we told you so years ago.
We did talk about this and these predictions, we did talk about the predictions and we did talk about nuclear as just sanity,
right,
surrounding energy policy in the state of Colorado. but I Colorado is starting to face energy realism. Mm-hmm. We see it with nuclear power. We're seeing it with utilities that are, it isn't just Travis Deal at CSU, Colorado Springs Utility, saying it now. You have, you know, Rawhide, you have the Platte River Power Authority looking at the Rawhide plant. And my guess is you're going to be staring at either coal or natural gas for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. And Xcel's been starting to make a little bit of noise too, but perhaps we'll get into that in a future show topic, because even they're starting to, they were one of the first to come out with these flashy goals. And even they're starting to say, hey, there's some red flags ahead. But as we're coming up on time here, Amy, do you have any takeaways for our listeners?
Yeah. Look for more energy realism. Look for that term. I think you'll see it or hear it in the energy policy debate. It'll enter the lexicon. The other one is my prediction, and I think, you know, you and I have talked about this plenty of times off screen, but I think you're going to see coal plants in Colorado remain open. And I'm not saying forever, but I think what you'll see, and probably what's likely to come out, delayed retirements. That's what you're going to hear, delayed retirements, because there is nothing to replace that power right now. And you can't shut down baseload power without replacing it with something. You can't energy efficiency your way out of this. And at the federal level, the goal is addition, not subtraction. So I think you're going to see coal plants in the state staying open for longer than anticipated. And get a generator, because who knows what's going to happen after that, in which case you should always be firming up your own grid inside your own house. So get yourself a generator.
Absolutely. But that does it for us. Another episode of PowerGab. If you like what you saw here, you can head over to powergab.org to check out our entire back catalog. We produce new episodes every single week. We're also available wherever you get your audio shows, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you'd like to reach out to us to suggest future show topics or a cool guest you'd like to see us interview, you can send those to info@powergab.org. We always love hearing from you guys. But until next week, we'll see you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Power Gab, I hope you'll share it with a friend.
Or even an enemy.
You can listen to more episodes on all of your favorite streaming services. We release a new episode each week.
If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a show topic, email info@powergab.org. And to watch the video version, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.